Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again for Parenting Afternoon. Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
This is your first question. There is this typical vicious circle of an argument in our house. My children are teenagers. When I ask and or tell them to do a job, more often than not, they don't do it. I often have to ask a second time, and if I have to ask a third time, I end up raising my voice. Then I'm told to calm down, that I'm always shouting, I'm a control freak, etc., etc. I'm talking about everyday chores like emptying and refilling the dishwasher and tidying the kitchen. Then there are the arguments like, it's their turn, you always ask me, etc. I have explained that I wouldn't have to raise my voice if they did it the first time. I have also suggested that I could just raise my voice all the time so they would do it the first time all the time. This is disturbing every single day, and I can assure you that it's no consolation if you tell me that this is family life in every house. I'm exhausted from it.
Oh, I can feel the exhaustion. And it really doesn't matter if it's normal or typical.
Yeah.
It matters that it's happening daily in your house. And, you know, and we've often talked about these adjustments in adolescence that teenagers go through, you know, abandonment and prioritizing friends and experimenting with new tastes. But one of them is really engaging in argument in different ways. You know, so aggressive, obviously aggressive argument is the door slamming, the shouting, the swearing, the rows. That's very obvious. But this one here that I'm going to call the art of delay is the passive version of that. And it is an art form. And teenagers really, especially some of them, have it down to an art form, which is where you say, perfectly reasonable, tidy up after yourself in the kitchen or empty the dishwasher, whatever it is. And they say, yeah, I'll do it in a minute. And 30 minutes go by and they haven't done it. And then you come in the second time, as this parent's describing, you know, maybe half an octave higher now this time, maybe more urgent, do the dishwasher. And they're like, yeah, I'll do it in a minute. Another 30 minutes go by and you're the one in the kitchen stomping around, slamming dishes, and your teenager's like, you have anger issues. You really need to sort yourself out.
Yeah.
They know exactly what they're doing. It's beautifully played.
Yeah.
But when you're having to, and understanding that and explaining it in no way can excuse it.
Yeah.
Because when you've got, and I'm hearing teenagers plural, when you've got more than one and you're at the receiving end of this all the time, it does put you into that place where you do become the grumpy bad form parent, you know, and they're like, but sure, you're always giving out. So what difference does this make? And you end up being quite ineffective, even in your getting cross with them.
Yeah.
Because they begin to minimize it with an eye roll saying, you're always like that. That's just who you are.
Yeah.
And they depersonalize. It has nothing to do with me or my lack of follow through. It's all on you. Look, you could take the whole if and then, if you do the dishwasher, then I'm happy to bring you to your friend's house at the weekend. Whatever it is, pick your own kind of thing. If you don't, then I'll understand that you're happy to make your own way.
Mm.
And you withdraw something for it.
Yeah.
And you have to do that. The other way, though, that's maybe a bit more creative and doesn't pull you into a control thing with teenagers, because they'll try to outdo you on that, is to sit together as a family, have a jar, a jam jar, whatever, mason jar, fill it full of every chore that needs doing on scraps of paper, take turns picking one out. And just write up who's responsible for what.
Mm.
Give everyone, be fair, give everyone a week or two to adjust to the new system.
Yeah.
And after that, tell them for every chore that you have to fill in, because someone doesn't do it, you're withdrawing a privilege.
Yeah.
And you have to mean it.
Yeah.
Like, so don't make withdrawing a privilege something that's ultimately a punishment on yourself.
Yes.
You know, so be really clear
well,
about
it is,
that.
Well, it is, because they'd end up having to empty the dishwasher anyway.
Do you know, but then... But they can also earn it back. So if they've missed a chore and you've had to do it, you say, well, that's it. I'm not doing whatever it is that you need doing. I won't be bringing you to your activity or your friend's house or picking you up or whatever it is. They can earn it back, because ultimately what you want is that they are doing it.
Mm.
So you don't have to withdraw something and it stays off the table. It's gone until it is earned back, but they earn it back by doing the chore and maybe an extra one in that instance. But I think you've got to get buy-in from everyone, and you say, look, this isn't working. I'm feeling very disrespected. Not you're disrespecting me, but I'm feeling very disrespected and I'm the one who ends up having to do everything. It's beginning to make me feel like the family housekeeper and I don't like how that feels.
Mm.
So it's all I. Here's what we're going to do. And you have the jam jar and they all pick out their chores and say, that's what we're going to do, but we have to hold each other accountable and move forward that way. Because otherwise you will just go around in this circle having rows and rows with them. Because what they're doing, and I'm almost whispering this at the parent listening, it is typical. Like, this is typical behavior, but that doesn't mean, just because something is typical, that we let it go.
Doesn't make it okay, yeah.
So it is about putting that boundary in place, but you have to be very explicit with teenagers as well. I want this task done by 3 o'clock on Friday. If that doesn't happen, this is the follow through.
Yeah.
Because other people say, like, you didn't tell me that. How was I supposed to know? I can't read your mind. It's all part of that passive art of delay.
Yes. Someone says, just turn off the Wi-Fi. And when the job is done, turn the Wi-Fi back on. Training teenagers is like training dogs. Someone else says, OMG, I so empathize with that parent. I wish I could offer them advice, but I can't. I tried everything and nothing worked. I really thought I was going mad. Menopause didn't help. They're all adults now. When they come home, they regress into mom slave mode.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Now, there's a whole thing on that. At Christmas is such a good time to see that when people tend to go home to family together. And no matter if you're 45 years old, if you're the youngest one in the family, you will be the one asked to sit on the floor when the seats are filled. Or to go to the bedroom and get someone's charger for them. Like you will. People do revert back to their family order when they get back together.
Yeah. We have two boys, a 3-year-old and an 11-month-old. The 3-year-old was a little bit out of sorts for a while after the baby was born, which we put down to jealousy. This has progressed now to him being overly aggressive with him and knocking him over when he's sitting on the floor or sometimes lying on him. We feel telling him off or telling him that he needs to be kinder hasn't worked, as he seems to like the attention it brings. But we can't just ignore it either, as we feel he will hurt him. We're also worried about moving them into a bedroom together in case something happens. Is there any advice available on how we should be dealing with this problem?
Yeah, I mean, this is really interesting because your 3-year-old is still very, very young.
Mm.
And that whole cause and effect thinking really isn't developed enough in them at all. So, you know, initially you have this baby and there's, you know, kind of confusion and there is, this baby's taking your time from me and I don't like it. But then they quickly realize, you know, actually, the baby doesn't really get in my way. They don't do much. They're just a baby.
Mm.
And so you can get this kind of wave of jealousy as they've experienced and then a settling. But now that baby is fast becoming a 1-year-old very soon, is more interactive, more mobile, and is becoming more of a competitor to your 3-year-old again for their stuff, in the way, needing you. And so you're getting it back again. But what you're talking about, and in general, like there's a whole lot of research done on the whole sibling-directed aggression. It even has that fancy name. But it's really common. That's why there's so much research on it. And it tends to fall under a very typical developmental trajectory. Okay, like you can have, as I said, the confusion and not liking sharing you. Then you can have a reprieve. Then you can have this. Those waves can actually continue. You know, your child can get a bit older. They can make more sense of things. Things settle. And then, of course, they shift a developmental stage. So does their sibling. And rinse, recycle. You know,
it really is.
It goes like that. I think what you have to look at here is from the perspective of your 3-year-old, a whole lot has been happening in their world in the last year.
Yeah.
Not least of all their own developmental piece. I think if you were to practice, and by practice I mean do something for a ring-fenced period of time, but do it daily. Be very predictable, be very consistent, very organized with it. Just sit with them and play with them together. Now, you've got an 11-month-old and a 3-year-old, so playing with them together, I mean songs, dancing, stacking up blocks and making the tumbling of blocks part of it, because your 3-year-old will pride themselves on building a tall tower, but your 1-year-old will pride themselves on knocking that tower down. So you almost want to prescribe that's really where they're at developmentally.
Yeah.
So you really want to do that. Again, I would row the boat with them, but you don't want your 3-year-old giving your 1-year-old whiplash by rowing the boat when you're not there. So you sit the 1-year-old on your lap and it's like they're sitting in the boat. And you and your 3-year-old row the boat with the 1-year-old in the middle, just gently forward and back. And you're getting rhythm, synchrony, repetition. You're getting the song and movement all in there. You're trying to teach them how to be together, how to play together safely. So again, though, when, and I'm saying when, not if, when your 3-year-old hurts your baby, you do want to say that gentle yet firm no.
Yeah.
Down to their eye level and say, no, we don't hurt people, you don't hit people or whatever it might be. But then immediately tend to your baby very gently, you know, talk to the baby, comfort the baby and do that in front of your 3-year-old so they see, actually, my behavior doesn't get me the focus, it gets my sibling the focus. So you want to make it less appealing to do the behavior.
Yeah.
But he still is only 3. So then you do want to sit after you've comforted the 1-year-old, go back to that piece of sitting with them, playing, praising his positive behaviour, really reinforcing that and getting them back in sync before you step away. So you come in and you stop it, you do the no to the three-year-old, you comfort in front of them the one-year-old who gets all of the attention, and then you go back to connection and you sit on the floor with the two of them together and play. So it's not like the three-year-old is, air quotes, punished because they're three and you're wasting your time. They will come through this phase. They definitely will, especially in a year, because when your three-year-old becomes four, just over four, they'll be much more capable of cause and effect thinking, a little bit more capable of more reasoning and rational, a bit now. They're not nailing it at four, a bit, but they are going to be able to do that. But also your almost one-year-old will be almost two and well able to stand their own corner and push back. So things will change. But for the next few months, I would say you are going to be dipping in and out, hovering. But if you practice daily playing with them together, you're reinforcing a sense of cohesion rather than competitiveness.
In as far as sharing a room, would it be better off to just wait until the eldest one is four?
I mean, yes, but I don't know if they have that option.
If you could do that,
So I think if that's the case, just be really clear about getting one to sleep before the other's in there, if you know what I mean. So they're not trying to get the two of them to sleep at the same time. The one-year-old might still be in a cot, I'm thinking. So there might be kind of safety that way. It depends on how physical your three-year-old is.
Yeah.
You know, if you really think, no, the one-year-old won't be safe in that room, then trust yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my God, yeah, absolutely. On the subject of chores, someone says, we write chores on empty toilet roll tubes and put them in a bag. Our kids pick them out, and when they have five jobs done, they can make a starfish shape. Once the starfish is complete, they can have their favourite scrapbook to work on and €5 in cash. Don't know if that'll work with teenagers, but for younger ones, it's a good idea.
It's really good with younger ones, because if you start it when they're younger, you've actually got a habit built in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you're just growing it up. You'll still get pushback in adolescence, but you're not introducing a new concept that now you're old enough to help me. They're old enough to help in various ways from 2 years old up.
Yeah. Mike, who's in Clare, says he's the youngest of the family. I've a family of my own also. When we meet up, what he means when he meets up with his siblings, etc., I'm always asked to get this and get that as if I'm still five. My kids think it's hilarious. I don't mind, really. Mike is 65.
Yep, it never
Isn't
ends.
Isn't that extraordinary? Yeah, never ends. Right, my teenage son, oh God, teenagers are getting a hard time today. My teenage son doesn't have the best personal hygiene. I know I can see the funny side of this too, but it's getting to the stage where I'm starting to notice the smell of BO off him, and his teeth aren't looking great either. I tried to speak with him about it a few weeks back, but he got really angry and stormed out of the room. I'm getting worried because I don't want other kids in school or elsewhere to make fun of him for smelling of BO, etc. You know yourself, when you're a teenager, you feel anything your parents say is wrong, and I want to approach this in a sensitive way without embarrassing him. However, I do need to land some points. I just feel like he isn't putting the time and effort into showering and cleaning properly. I know a few small changes will have him fine in no time, but it's not the easiest thing to bring up with a teenager who's already going through enough.
Absolutely. There's such lovely empathy in this letter,
there
I
is,
think.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That really understanding from the perspective of your teenager. I mean, look, I don't know who's written this letter, obviously. I don't know if it's a mom or a dad or who has written in, but if possible, I would have a male family member. It may not even, if this is from a dad, it might even be a cousin or, somebody in the family who could take him out of the house, have a quiet chat in the car, you know, where he can't storm off to his bedroom. But, you know, just really respectfully, but directly. The best way to talk to teenagers is to be direct and explicit about what you're trying to say, but to be kind in how you're doing it.
Yeah.
And that can be a finer balance to strike than we like to think. You know, you're saying, well, I'm being direct. But what was your tone? Was your tone dripping in judgment? Because they will pick that up very, very quickly. But bring him, you know, and then you could put together a nice self-care package is what I'm thinking of. Nice products, little bits and bobs, leave it in his room and he can begin to take care of himself. I would normalize rather than problematize this. And I think it will help because this parent is really empathic. He isn't a smelly kid per se. His body is changing. And when your body changes, this is what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you're making it about a normal change, but not that he is unclean.
Yes,
you know, because he's going to take that to heart. The other thing, though, Sean, in this letter that just is jarring with me slightly, and I'm going to plant a seed if the parent's listening in your head. I just am curious about this kid's self-esteem.
Yeah, that's what I was getting from it as well. They were worried about that he wasn't going to storm out, but that he would be really mortified and hurt by this.
And I'm just curious, because when, like, lots of parents listening will have had similar conversations with teenagers, but we're talking about a kid who there is a noticeable smell of BO and his teeth aren't clean. Mm. So he's not even brushing his teeth.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, how is he feeling? How is he doing in general? What's going on with peer group? The reason we're getting loads of letters about teenagers, I find it myself in my own clinic practices, we're a month into the teenage summer holiday. So there's been an intense time around each other. But I am just wondering about this kid's mental health, and I'm going to ask this parent just to keep an eye on that, because when we don't feel good within ourselves, we don't feel good about ourselves, and it's actually very hard to prioritise things like self-care, even basic hygiene. Mm. So keep an eye on that and just see, might there be something else going on around it.
Yeah, especially with the end with going through enough.
Yeah. I'd read it and you were reading and I was going to know that. I just wonder, is there something else going on for this kid?
Yeah. Mm. Hi, Joanna. I've got twin girls aged 8. Up until recently, they were the best of friends, did everything together and dressed the same. One of them, child A, has had a bit of a personality change over the last 6 months and has now decided she doesn't like dressing the same as her twin. Doesn't want to do the same activities and really wants to be individual. I really support this, but her sister, child B, is finding it really hard. Over the weekend, they went to a party together. When child A refused to wear the same hoodie as child B, all hell broke out. Child B got really upset and started shouting, she doesn't want to be my twin anymore. I've come to realise that maybe child B has relied on having a twin too much over the years. I want them to stay close, but I want them to have separate personalities too. How do I do this while keeping both of them happy?
Well, first of all, you're not going to do it. You know, as the parent, it's not for you to keep them close, but allow them be separate. You're going to support them in doing this. And that's not a subtle difference, because otherwise you won't win. First of all, they'll each accuse you of taking the other one's side. And there's no winning in that.
Yeah.
I just think when child B said, she doesn't want to be my twin anymore, that's fear. And that's very specifically, you know, that kind of separation that can happen with siblings, particularly twins. And then one isn't ready for the separation and the other is, I'm totally ready. I'm gung ho to go, can be experienced as a form of separation anxiety. I don't want to be left alone.
Yeah.
I don't want to be
on rejection
on my own.
Yeah.
Because as a twin, I've never been on my own.
Yeah.
So you even wanting a different hoodie to me makes me feel, oh, I'm going to be on my own. I'm not ready. So it's sounding a bit like separation anxiety that's creeping in there. They're moving from early to mid childhood is the other thing that's, you know, just about. They're only 8. But one is moving a little quicker than the other.
Mm.
Okay. And again, anyone, teachers listening will know, but parents parenting different children, it's not like they all woke up on their 8th birthday and went, I'm here, I've arrived. You know, they do this at their own pace. Twins are individuals. And I do think there is an idea, culturally, in society, there's an idealization of twinship. You know, cute twins. Oh my God, twins, amazing. And actually that can lead to difficulties in separating because they become associated with, I suppose if you even think about it, if you use a singular word like twin to describe two separate people, immediately that's a problem.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
You know, and we feed into this and then we go, oh, but they don't like to separate. And you go, well, what's our role in this? It's why I think as a parent, you have to be really careful.
Years ago, actually, there was a couple of women who worked here who were twins, identical twins.
Yeah.
And they were just referred to as the twins.
See, but it goes on for life, doesn't it? I do think, though, what you want to do is understand that child A is going through a process of de-identification. Okay? Mm. It's still very young, but that's not abandonment. It's more about redefining the relationship. So it might be helpful to get some time with child B, I hope I'm getting their letters right now, child B, and empathize with how hard it is, but while reflecting that, yes, some things are changing, but you still have a lot in common. And focus on listing, you both like this, you both like that, you both enjoy whatever, you hang out together. And yes, one of you does prefer jujitsu to ballet or whatever it might be. Focus on the differences in a celebratory way just as much as what they have in common, and remind her they will always be special sisters, but it is also exciting to take on your new thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Child B, it's a tricky time.
It's very tricky. Just keep an eye on her though, because she just might not be ready to be an individual.
Yeah.
She might be going, no, thank you. Happy to kick that down the road. But child A is allowed to want her own things too.
Yeah. I wonder, are they the same? Because it seems to be a kind of how long is a piece of string question, but whether with twins, should they be in the same class at school or should you separate them?
And
different schools have different policies on that.
Very inconsistent evidence on that too. I mean, generally it seems that when more formal education is kicking in, which I guess is about second, third class, you know, that if you're going to separate them, that's maybe a better time. Mm. Many sets of twins do prefer to stay together in those early years of school. And it can be a school policy rather than parental preference. I would advocate it should be a bit of both. There should be consultation on it, and it really should be led by the children and what they need. Now, that's if you're in a school that has two classes.
That can do that, yes,
you know,
of course.
Because many schools can't, of course. And the schools that can't are putting twins or multiples, you could have triplets, in the same class together, and it's being managed. So it can be managed. But research is very inconsistent on whether you should or shouldn't. What really does come out is be led by the children and therefore their parents who know them really well.
Joanna, thanks a million. As ever, Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.